flow. There's a 40% reduction on capital. Building program. What that means is that the next one is our inability to expand the footprint of the NDA. The NDA currently is limited to about 27 districts, and there's a need to expand beyond those particular 27 districts. Now, our coordination on the ground of development activities is therefore largely constrained. On program three, which is the last program, The first one relates to our ability to undertake research and empirical studies. And as I suppose it's because the impact studies and longitudinal studies, they tend to be very expensive. Our current budget for program three for goods and services is currently sitting at less than 3 million. Now 3 million is what we have in our kitty to do these impact studies, to do longitudinal studies in relation to realizing the provisions of Section 2 of our Act around influencing development policy. Now, we are limited in our ability to influence a debate around a development policy because we only have about 3 million or so, which has been further reduced, I think, by about 4% or so. Our main one as well is around limiting the ability of the NDA in conducting program evaluation studies. We have a number of studies that a number of programs that were implemented in the NDA, CARRIDE, the volunteer program, the UIF, capacity building and grant funding. Now, all of those, according to the evaluation policy, they need to be evaluated. So we are unable to therefore make sure that there's improvement in program implementation in relation to this particular big program, where there's a lot of investment be made. So we can learn lessons about what works, what does not work, because we only are limited to 3 million rents, with which we must do evaluation studies, we must do research studies, and we must do all these longitudinal studies as well.
We won't go beyond that.
Further questioning this challenge that we have in Gaza. The first one is with regards to COE cuts. Of course, we SASA has already started with the business process engineering process, which looks at reprioritization of posts required and those that need to be filled within the available budgets, and redesigning of certain posts in some areas. And of course, we will possibly be looking at this as well as the NDA. And then we also put efforts in investing in digitization and automation of our systems where possible. We know that technology is indeed expensive, but it improves our efficiencies. And in our space, it helps us in terms of gathering data in a much more efficient manner, which would in turn be able to use for evidence for planning and directing specific programs that speak to the felt needs of society, and thereby reducing the challenges and the needs in communities. So that's a way, and you'd recall that just a few days ago, the minister launched an online platform where people would not stand in lines at SASA, but rather would be able to to book a booking system. So we're trying to reduce lines and stuff, and we launched that a few weeks ago. We were also considering outsourcing some of the functions in areas that would be cost effective. Then in terms of goods and services, we've already started creating a shared services approach within the portfolio in order to leverage on each other's infrastructure and resources. For example, the NDA in some provinces has reduced spending on infrastructure and rentals, and has moved their staff into some of the DSD offices in provinces. So we are also looking at areas around contracts and other legal areas and so on and so forth. We're also working on a common building for the portfolio in Tswanefo that will house the head offices of both the DSD, India and SASA. And then, of course, the reduction in cost is natural in some of the costs. We're using government venues instead of hotels in some areas and so on. And then I won't speak into some of the other areas, but just to say that in terms of controls improving strengthening the controls area. We're looking at areas such as telephones, fleet management, etc., in terms of reducing the. If you could go to the last slide, just very quickly here. Of course, as I indicated, one of the key things we're looking at is implementing a donor and stakeholder management strategy. We actually have this in place already. Now, we just need to really make it work in the practical terms. So we want to augment our budgets by looking at our programs, including support for our programs, support through provision of technical skills and expertise in areas where they lack. And of course, this is done through a win-win or mutual and equal benefit approach. And during the start of the pandemic, you recall, we worked very closely with civil society organizations and managed to augment bulk of the money for funding for food. And we saw churches, businesses, NGOs, and even individuals come to the fore to assist in terms of providing food for the poor. So we're looking at extending some of those partnerships. And of course, with SASA, we've already some work has been underway, where some additional resources from outside have been planted in to assist where necessary. And just last week, the minister met with the potential private sector partners. And in the coming days, we'll be meeting more potential private sector partners who actually are saying that, look, we want to contribute and work with you as a Department of Social Development in areas where you may not have whether it's funding or whether it's technical skills. So we're working on that. And then just on the one more, in terms of resource mobilization, NDA has spoken to it, but we're looking at various options of revenue generation, whether through soliciting third-party funding or projects that generate project management fees, or the possibility of engaging with global partners such as the EU and others, and even locally through our development institutions. That's one of the other areas we're looking at. And lastly, Chair, we want to just recommend to the committee that you note this presentation, appreciates the unfavorable the fiscal environment that we're in, and obviously the impact it has on the entire public sector, and that has forced us as a portfolio to do more or less and to think differently in innovative ways to be more agile and to extend our partnerships much, much greater. I would also recommend that you take notes and support some of the key innovative measures and strategies that, of course, that we've developed and put forward, recommitting ourselves to deliver on our mandates and to contribute towards improving the quality of life of all South Africans. And then we also recommend that you support the ESG portfolio, that if there's room for reconsideration of budget priority areas, given to those areas of interventions that whose provision is the fulfillment of the aspirations of our constitution, and of course some of those areas we've listed there below. But I just also want to add that the critical areas over and above what is listed here is of course the areas of the CSG extension, as you correctly mentioned. It is a challenge of the litigation that is currently underway. That's in the engaging our colleagues at Treasury. Of course, we are also very keen on the possible extension of the 350 grant because of the impact that we are in. And of course, the COE budget is critical for us and areas around the healthcare services, particularly around support for gender-based violence and HIV and AIDS and some of the other measures. So, Chair, these are some of the areas that we want to prioritize going forward. I want to thank you very much, Chair, for the opportunity to present, and I'm sorry that we are over by about 5 minutes. Thank you so much, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Mthunu. As you said, there is the Honourable Minister Lindiwe Zulu and the Honourable Deputy Minister Bagopane Zulu who have joined us. Minister, do you want to say anything now?
Thank you, Chairperson. Not really, Chairperson, because I think now that the presentations have been made, it's important for us to get to listen to what the issues that are being raised by members. And so, if need be, one will have to comment at the end. But I think we can allow the meeting to continue, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Minister. You are welcome. Again, oral members, here is the presentation by the department and its agencies. You know how we do it. Can I get indications of oral members who would like to come in? Let's hear.
Matafa.
Oral Matafa.
Peters.
Right. So, Honorable Peters.
Sonyana.
Honorable Sonyana, welcome.
Kaiso.
Honorable Kaiso.
Dihale.
Honorable Dihale. Any other honorable member? Okay, let's proceed. If any other honorable member comes in, we'll let's take an indication of about 5 minutes and see how far we go. Honorable Matafa, you're on the platform.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me first start by thanking Bawumkhunu and the team for the presentation. The presentation is very comprehensive, and I think it will assist us going forward in doing our work. And greeting the Chair.
Yeah, I know that you've got the challenge of your connectivity, but can you briefly just show yourself so that are able to grab you in town when they see you about appropriations? Just show your face and then you stop your video.
I will do that, Chair. Just need to open up my screen. Am I seen on the screen?
Yeah, we can see you very well. I think it's important for the department to see so that they don't say that they're talking to the ghost. Yeah. you can stop the video, Honorable Matafa, and then continue.
Not because my network is unstable, so if you know, I might get cut in the middle of editing. But I really appreciate the opportunity to engage. And as I was saying, Chair, I wanted to pass my regards to the Minister and the DM and thank them for joining us, as you had already done, Chair. The first point, Chair, that I want to reflect on is on the vacancy alluded to, and they give figures to say there are 17 senior management and about 40 are at lower level. Now, my question, Chair, would be just to understand maybe from the department the specific details of the key positions that are vacant, both at senior management and at local staff. Our view is that this will assist so that we understand the magnitude of the challenge confronted by the department. And secondly, Chair, it is also coming out that there are some internal control deficiencies. So coupled to the first point would be to have also a understanding from this particular department vacancies as to which ones are related to internal controls. Maybe the vacancies also are contributing to the weakness in internal control as a result of the department not being able to fill these vacancies. And that's why maybe we end up with a mismanagement of the budget, and obviously it affects the grant beneficiaries and poor households. The department also speaks to maybe approaching Treasury with a amended structure, or a structure that will be consummated to the budget cuts. Now, we're also asking these questions, Chair, so that in the event that maybe the department approaches Treasury and the views of Treasury end up in the committee, we are able to understand how the department would like us to support them in the discussions as far as either the new structure or the appropriations from the fiscus, how they should be considered as per the challenges and the need of the particular skills that are not available as a result of this particular vacancy. I'd also would like to speak on the implementation of measures that are aimed at cushioning poor households against the effects of the pandemic, particularly as it relates to the social relief of distress grant and food parcels. My question would be just to understand the view of the department in terms of their satisfaction level, in terms of the budget that is allocated. If it was used efficiently and economically, particularly when you consider the logistics of distribution of these food parcels are concerned, did we derive value for money from the cost incurred to ensure that we implement this particular interventions? And coupled to that, we just need to understand if there are there any lessons that maybe we have picked up as a department through this particular period of intervention. And as a result of those particular lessons, what would be done differently to ensure that whatever lessons that have been learned and are seen not to have been assisting to the work of the department, how else would we, or would the department rather, try to amend those particular lessons to ensure that they do not reoccur? The last one, Chair, is on the social worker scholarship sub-programs. I think it was indicated that it was phased out after the intake of 2017-2018. Now, in my view, I find it that it's as a concern that it means that as government, we will no longer invest in critical areas such as social workers. And it is our long-held view that this is vital in the provision of social welfare, particularly to those vulnerable households and communities that under normal circumstances are living under a situation of distress. Whether pandemic or no pandemic, they just are faced with constant challenges, which in the main were resolved by the intervention of this particular social workers, and it really helped a great deal. So we just wanted to raise that concern, and maybe the department in their response, they can highlight what measures are going to be in place to mitigate the negative impact as far as this particular phasing out is concerned. And Chair, from the department's perspective, was the phasing out of this particular program directly linked to the budget constraints, or was there another rationale behind budget beyond budgetary issues? Maybe there could be another point that we have missed as a committee. It would be interesting for the department just to share with us what really informed the decision to phase this particular scholarship out. And maybe that particular response will even answer the questions that I had on this particular topic. For now, Chair, let me pause there. And once again, thank you for the opportunity to participate in this discussion. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Matafa. Honourable Peters, please come in. Show yourself.
Yes, Chairperson. Yes. Oh, no. Am I invisible?
Very much so, Honourable Peters. You can close it if you have got an unstable connectivity. Just wanted to make sure that they see you.
Okay.
Change the arrangements. Chairperson, I think I wanted to kick off where Honorable Matafa, let me start by thanking the Minister, Deputy Minister, and the Acting DG, plus the teams from SASA and NTA for the presentations. And I would want to say this is one department, Minister, that you probably know. The department, I mean, the committee has got very much interest in, primarily because of the fact that you are the custodian of services to the most vulnerable. And therefore, it is a committee, I mean, a department closer to our hearts. And most of the times, even on our public hearings, we get inputs that are more related to social development related issues, and in particular, the challenges that grant beneficiaries are experiencing. So thank you very much, Minister and team. The issue of the vacancies have been covered, and also wanting to know whether these are critical posts to fill. But I want to know, maybe if I have to take off from where Honorable Matafa has left off, Jefferson, the issue of the phasing out of the scholarships for social workers. I'm saying this because the issue of social workers are very close to my heart. I'm a social worker by profession, by the way. And I want to say that once the phasing out of the social worker scholarship linked to the rates of unemployed social workers, and if the department saying that they've got a challenge in absorbing or placing the social work scholarship beneficiaries who are presently unemployed and in the communities. And if you look at the challenges society is experiencing, Chairperson, you can actually realize that we need more and more social workers in our communities. There was a time, Minister, where there was a discussion between the Department of Basic Education in particular and the Department of Social Development and Health to make sure that at every school there is a social worker, because of some of the challenges that we are faced with in society. The ills of society, we're not saying that social workers are the remedy to the ills of society, but they are sufficiently and adequately trained to be able to handle those particular issues. And I would believe that there is a need for more social workers in our communities. If in our communities we can have at least a social worker per ward, I think some of the challenges that we are having would have a particular reference point to attend to. Chairperson, the other issue that I wanted to find out from the ministry and the department is whether the social relief of distress budget was spent to the last cent. And if there is any underspending, how did that arise, especially in view of the challenges that people had and also still have in accessing this particular grant? There were many people, Honorable Chairperson, the CEO of SASSA would remember this, who actually complained about them being disqualified because they were said to have received or to be beneficiaries of the UIF. And when investigated, they were found not to have worked in the last 15 or whatever number of years. So I think that there's a particular response that we need from there. And I would want to know from SASSA and the department if there are any beneficiaries or potential beneficiaries or qualifying people who are owed money due to the delays in processing. And if there were people who were approved and were not paid out, and now the department has got this challenge in terms of the budget reductions, what is going to happen to those people who were approved and are still waiting for the payments? The other question is, how many of the foreign nationals and people who did not qualify have been arrested for defrauding the poorest of the poor? Because I would believe that it is important, Chairperson, that people are being followed up. There is no justification that you could apply or get access to a grant that you did not qualify for. But also, what are the consequence management interventions that the department has implemented to deal with those who approved or enabled this particular defrauding to happen? And also, Chairperson, this one is a question to the Minister. Is the Department of Social Development and its provincial counterparts capacitated enough to empower grant beneficiaries to graduate out of being grant recipients? What social development programs are DSD and its provinces and agencies involved in to make sure that you don't have intergenerational grant beneficiaries? And it is important that we understand that this question, Minister, is also linked to the initial question that I raised with regard to social workers, because they are intertwined. The other one, Chairperson, again to the Minister, BIG versus SRG. Is the Minister of the view that it's about time that the South African government consider implementing the BIG and taking lessons from the SRG process will DSD and its implementing agencies be able to implement or manage the rollout of the BIG if implemented? And also, Chairperson, I would want to know, I know that SASSA has done very well and they tried their best, Honorable Chairperson, I think the CEO would know about this, that to facilitate and to enable the post office to be able to pay out the grants and to be a service provider to the DSD and SASSA. But what else needs to be done between the Department of Communications and Postal and Telecommunications, as well as DSD, to make sure that post office can be able to deal with the inhumane nature in which they render this service? To see those long queues and to see people being returned from there, to see people sleeping over at the post office. Minister, it takes us back to those gory pictures of before 1994, where there was a resolve that no one should be treated in this indignified way in order to access a grants from government. And I think the post office needs a way in which, probably through this committee, we could invite the post office to come and present their approach to servicing the most vulnerable. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Peters. Let me welcome Honorable Sonyanum to come in. You're welcome, Honorable Member. I think the first time you're with us. You are welcome. Thank you very much. Come in with your question.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm seriously having a problem with my camera. I wish I could have switched it on, but it seems like I'm not going to be able to. Chairperson, I would like to welcome the presentation that was presented to us today. And then I would just like to understand from Mr. Mkunu himself on how long has he's been acting on this position. And then secondly, to the minister, I would like to understand when will the position of the DG actually be filled? Because we cannot just keep on acting. Stability is brought by permanent positions. So maybe the minister can assist us on that one. And then on the issue of the 57 vacancies, my previous colleague have actually spoken about this. I just wanted to understand from the department, as they speak about the redesign, on exactly what do they mean? I wish they would have gone into detail on exactly what do they mean by the redesign of the department because of the budget cuts. And then lastly, Chair, I just wanted to speak on the ICT master plan, because I heard that they've said they've achieved out of the six steps program, so they've achieved three, and then the other three is now affected because of the budget cuts. You know, digitization is one of the most important thing, especially as the world, it is what it is, and we're not gonna go back to how we used to live. It is what it is now, and COVID is gonna be with us for a very long time, and even our way of life has changed. So I would like to understand that, I understand there is budget cuts, but how can they make sure that they achieve this so that the digitization program is not affected or is finalized? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Sonyanum. Can I take Honorable Kaiso?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I think I've been covered largely by the input of my colleagues, Honorable Dipu and Honorable Matafa, on the number of areas there, but I think it's important. Let me start first with the recommendations that have been submitted by the department, and let me welcome the presentation that has been made, and and the ministers and the deputy minister present. So let me start with the recommendations, because I think they are very, very much important to for us as a standing committee on appropriation to consider those recommendations. I want to point out rightly on the issue, for instance, on the topping the support grant and the establishment of the Inspectorate for Social Assistance. It's going to be very, very much crucial given the fact that during the presentation, an outline has been made in terms of how far, to what an extent has poverty and inequality, you know, has entrenched itself. And the measure in terms of that, it is the Gini coefficient, which then tells us where are we getting to in terms of the two areas, that is inequality and poverty. So it won't be just an issue of management of figures here, but obviously the development, the achievement of NDP and the Millennium Development Goal is also very key as to which direction is the ship facing. So I think the primary objective here would definitely to agree with the reduction of poverty and inequality. And therefore, it does tell us that now with agreeing or considering these critical recommendations which have been made, they tell us they would at least tilt towards a particular direction which will deal with the issue of inequality. Measures should be made to ensure that now there should be thorough you know, transition towards, you know, implementation of inspectorate section and topping up of child support grant, because obviously it has constitutional imperatives. Those areas, I agree, they must definitely just go as they are written to be protected. Otherwise, we will get into trouble. So that is the reason that I'm saying, as a committee, we need to consider those recommendations made by the department. And then on the issue of, you know, there are 309 offices that SASA is running, and the report says they are run at the, with the staff in there, it has been run by staff at the level at level 8 instead of at least level 12, and also there are a number of vacancy up to I think it's around 57 vacancies, of which I want to believe that's where you would find upper levels being the ones that make up the critical vacant positions there. But I also want to know how many of those that are critical supposed to be, are they budgeted too? Because it's very important that as soon as we say management or the office spend there, it's been run at level 8, then it means there are challenges, and of which I want to believe they need budget. So what one is trying to say is that all in all, that there needs to be some way that all these critical areas that have been mentioned here by the department, they needed to be considered fully, such that now there is a sufficient intervention by the department, because it's very, very much key, especially dealing with poverty and inequality. I want to believe, Honorable Chair, that the issue of work from home goes together with the issue of digitized program, which must be implemented. And once we're talking in terms of work from home, it means then obviously there must be intensification of work in terms of digitization, and therefore somewhere, somehow, telecom has to come in, to boost that area in as far as fiber connection is concerned. So I agree with Honorable Boo that at some stage we need to find way how do we engage, telecom and the, so that the harmonization of this, what has been said here in terms of digitization program and, work from home. So I hopefully that there is a budget ring fence to do all this, the department is saying. Because it's an issue mentioned around the issue of outsourcing, we should not really, yes, Honorable Chair.
Please switch off your video.
Yes, Chair, I'm finishing.
No, I was saying switch off your video. Oh. We're losing you.
Oh, okay. So I'm not sure at one point where I lost, Chair.
Please just.
But
just,
lastly, let me. Sorry.
The last point. Yeah, you were starting here.
Oh, the last point.
Yeah.
Okay. So the last point here, Honorable Chair, is the issue on. I see there is a area of I would term it restructuring of the workplace, because sometimes when you talk about outsourcing, it means then there's a process of restructuring of the workplace, of which I want to believe that the department has already made means to make a proper consultation with the stakeholders, especially the organized labor. So sometimes it's one of the area that raises strained relation in as far as this is concerned. So I'm hopeful that the department is quite careful about that. So that is the last area, Chair, Honorable Chair. But otherwise, with the recommendation, I really move that now those recommendations be considered by the committee. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Kaiso. Honorable Dehale, it's your turn.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Greetings to everybody, the ministers, deputy minister and her minister. Greetings, department. I want to welcome the presentation presented to this committee. Chairperson, the honorable members touched on many issues. But I just want to put an emphasis on the issue of vacancies, especially where the management is involved and the position, higher positions are being occupied by the person who is acting. My worry is that the life is not really fair, because at the end of the day, you end up not even appointed to that position. So it's better if they take care of it very quick and make sure that the person who is acting is not an actor, but fully occupied. And the chairperson, I want to really touch on, the deputy minister knows very well, as she was busy on the ground last time. She even visited our area, whereby the area has got a project of drop-in centers. And these drop-in centers have been attended by the orphans and the vulnerable children. Others are child-headed. I really understand the issue of underspending and underfunded. Honorable Dubois touched on it, and she spoke very loud on it. But I want to say, Deputy Minister, even if we have this challenge of monies, please just make sure with your minister that you do something for these people, because they are no more receiving the funds from the social development. The other issue that I want to talk to If I am not going to be out of order, Chairperson, is the issue of the social grant. In our constituency, always will receive the question from the grandparents who are supposed, or the older people that are supposed to receive the social grant, but because their partners were deployed in education or they were nurses in different departments. So at the end of the day, these people don't qualify to receive the social grant. And the other guy was saying, or older person was saying, in our constituency, I've been self-employed and now the relationship is sour. I cannot keep on begging my wife for at least money to buy bread or something. So if the government can just have pity on us and assist us, I don't know if ever this will at the end of the day happen to this type of a people, but if we can look on something that can assist them and push wherever we can, my dear ministers, or even give them half of what the other people are getting. Because truly speaking, when you hear these people talking, it's so painful, and they really need an assistant. Chairperson, that's what I wanted to raise. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Honorable Dikgale. Is there another member who would like to come in before I proceed? Okay, let me come in. Honorable Dikgale, please mute your things. Honorable Dikgale.
Hello, can you hear me?
Please mute everything now.
You did not hear me because it was muted. I don't know what...
I can hear you now. We heard you all until you finished. So, okay. It's just mute and thank you. Thank you so much. I was asking whether is there another oral member would like to come in before I come in myself. In the absence of any member coming in, let me again welcome the presentation by Mr. Ntunu, acting DG, and the team and the agencies. Thank you so much. Perhaps let me start with where Honorable Sonyana started also. Minister, I think when you respond, you'll definitely tell us about the filling of the post of the DG for obvious reasons. I don't think we can ever emphasize that in terms of the delivery and stability in the department. Then again, this one goes to the minister again. Putting on your previous cap, minister, I just wanted to check what role is the department and its agencies playing in helping SMMEs, in helping Black-owned businesses owned by women and people living with disabilities, rural businesses and township businesses. I say this because we try and emphasize here that as government would like to see the budget that we appropriate here being used to try and transform the economy. So please help with us, and we think that your department has a very important role in the realization of the economic reconstruction and recovery plan as announced by the president, because we do hold the view as this committee that the cuts that you are seeing, that we are talking about as it were at the moment, will only be able to avoid them if we go back to an economy which is growing. I just want to check, okay. the question is, as a percentage of combined spending, and GDP. I just want to check from the department, how do we compare to other countries as DSD in terms of the budget that we that is being allocated to our good fairs? And can you share with, number two, can you share with the committee your historical understanding as DSD and your agencies, and perhaps you'll also be giving us reasons why did you have those understanding in those areas, and what has been done to try and improve that. The thing, what measures are we putting in place to mitigate underspending? I'm sure the question is, it's obvious where it comes from, because we can't be complaining about budget cuts when we are not able to spend what has been allocated to us. It becomes difficult to sell the argument that please don't cut when the department or its agencies are underspending. From your perspective, you say that there's a percent, I think 1% of your budget goes to CETA. What would you say? Are you getting any value from that? Or would you say the country is getting any value from what you contribute to CETA? 1% of your budget is a very low. It's a lot of money. I saw that you spoke about international partners and foreign partners or institutions that you fund. Can you please share with this committee what are those institutions and what value are we getting from them, or perhaps why are we having those relationships with them? You in the slide where you are talking about the impact that the intervention, especially during COVID, came up with, even in what would have happened if you didn't come in. You have shared that slide with us, and you have also said the impact of terminating those interventions. You also shared with the committee. But obviously, you are making a big assumption that things won't change, right? Everything remains equal. Because remember that we got in when COVID sets in and when there was lockdown and so on, and then people lost their jobs and so on and so forth. But the economy is now open, people are going back to jobs and so on. Do you think that the outcomes that you are having are watertight? Have you factored those things that the situation under COVID is different from what we are having now, especially when we had lockdown and we had a lot of industries not operating? Just to check, one of the things that we have seen is that we have got a lot of repetitions. I'll say repetitions or same programs or similar programs with other departments in general. That's what we found in departments. But I just want to check with you, are there other, what can be called social grants or anything close to that are lying in other departments, which perhaps would make more sense if we put them under one roof? And I would like to get your perspective from that. Another question is, how much was lost through some leakages like corruption in the department in year 2020-21? And what is the department doing to make sure that there's no recurrence of that? And obviously, before me also spoke about the consequent management. I think that was Comrade Peters who said, what has happened? How many people have been arrested about the leakages? Because these are the monies which are going to the most vulnerable sector of our population. So to find that there are people who are helping themselves or companies who are helping themselves with that money is something that we as a country should frown upon and make sure that there are consequences for that. If you were SASSA, if you were to scale yourselves in a scale of 0 to 10, 0 being horrible and 10 most efficient, where do you think we are in terms of efficiency and quality of service that we are giving to our people as far as SASSA and your agencies are concerned? Then another question, which is related to Honorable Peter's question. Look, there was a lot of there were a lot of arguments which were made about SAPO taking over the distribution of grants. As you know, these are the issues which even ended up in court and so on. From your perspective, Minister, DG, and everybody, SASSA, I just want to check, what do you think? Do you think that we are in a better position now that SAPO is doing this work or before that? I just want to get your perspective. One of the reasons which was advanced when the post office wanted this function, they said it will help the post office to be sustainable. So what has happened to the post office as such? I would like to hear you. NDA, I think it's just for future references. It's because we are not just talking to the honorable members here. We are talking to the whole country. They are listening to you. It's very important that you should always just say exactly briefly what NDA is doing, quickly its achievements and so on and so forth. So I think what I'm saying to you, can you please just share with us what exactly is NDA doing, and what would you say your achievements have been? Let's have that. Yeah, that takes care of our questions. Before I give back to the minister and the department to respond, other members, is there a question which came up as we're perhaps coming up with our questions? Okay, that's fine. Honorable Minister, please, you are all yours. Take us through the responses to the issues which have been raised by the honorable members.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like to request that the department, the two entities, respond to the relevant questions. I will respond to those that I think were directed to myself. And the DM is also in the meeting. If in case the DM wants to say something, I'm sure the DM can be able to be given an opportunity. But let's rather give to the department and the entities what we call the DSD portfolio to respond. And I think the DG will direct who must answer which question. The CEOs will answer, but they will also have to direct questions also to be answered by some of their delegation, because I guess everybody has got a responsibility in each and every corner here. So people must be able to respond. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Chair. And thank you, Minister. Thank you, honorable members, for the questions that have been asked. Very tailored questions and very specific questions on a number of areas, and we'll do our best to respond to all of them, quite a few of them. Let me start this way and indicate that, in terms of the questions raised by honorable, I think it's Kaiso, around the CSG top-up and the inspectors, I very much welcome and appreciate the fact that the committee would be able to assist us in this regard. It is a very important aspect of our work, and so we really, really welcome that, and we appreciate the manner in which the Honourable Member has indicated could possibly look at the system in that regard. Let me talk to the vacancy rate issue briefly, and then I'll ask Fani to come in. Fani, when you come in, can you also deal with the issues of corruption? Can you also deal with the issue of or Devon and Kumbula will deal with the HSCTA related matter, as well as the historical funding issue in the department? I think we are at about, if I'm not mistaken, around 60% now in filling the vacancies that we have, and most of those are at the senior level, and they are of course in the recruitment pipeline at some advanced stages in that regard. Of course, had some challenges in terms of some of the agencies that we normally rely on to assist us in processing vacancies posts, rather, in terms of the processes that need to be followed. And we had to go out and look on our own for alternative sources in order to assist us in this regard. But a number of the posts are being filled, and I think in the next few weeks or so, a bulk of these will be filled. As I indicated, we had around 60% or so in filling those. So maybe let me ask Fani to come in now. Fani, if you can respond to the questions related, as I indicated. Then Devon and Kumbula immediately after that. And then I will then go to Civil to respond to the social scholarship program. And then we'll take it from there. Fani?
Chairperson, my apology. It might have done, the DG might have that might also respond with regard to the adverts that have been done already, because I don't think it's adequate just to say we are 60%, but it might be important for the DG to indicate which of the top posts, for instance, have been advertised, including the fact that just last week or a week or so, we filled the one of the senior posts that of one of the posts that was filled through cabinet. DG, I think you have to be specific where you need to be specific, please. Don't create a situation where members have to come back and ask a question again.
We filled the corporate services posts in the course of this week, DDG corporate services. We're in the process of filling the DDG welfare services and the strategy and organizational transformation posts. We have about three chief director posts that we will be filling in the next few weeks that are at an advanced stage. We do have a chief director for procurement that has resigned about a month and a half ago. So we are also recruiting in that regard. We are recruiting the chief director responsible for legislation as well. And the bulk of the other posts are at a much more lower level. So we are trying to fill these posts as swiftly as possible. Thank you very much, Minister. If I can ask Fani, maybe Fani, before you come in, Chairperson, there was a question asked by yourself around the issues relating to women-owned businesses and the support rendered in that regard. I just want to say that we've put ourselves a target in the APP that we would support 40% through our procurement processes, that 40% would be women-owned enterprises. And of course, this is aligned to the president's directive around supporting women. Let me just say that in the past two quarters, if I'm not mistaken, if not the entire financial year, I think in the past two quarters, we've actually supported just over 50% of women-owned enterprises within the department, particularly with regards to procurement for PPE and so on. So I just also want to indicate that our business model in terms of the community development and nutrition centers, which are across all provinces, are specifically tailored to get cooperatives in those particular municipalities and districts to support by providing fresh vegetables and so on and so forth. So it all comes from cooperatives in those particular areas, Black-owned SMMEs in those particular areas, in township areas and in rural areas across the Republic. So I just thought that we should add it before I forget it. So if Fani, you can come in now, and then immediately after you will give Devon and Kumbula.
Thank you, DG. So in terms of the internal control deficiencies, it's partly because of our policies has not been updated and reviewed. in our prior 2019-20 financial year, we had about 19 policies that was outdated. And what we've done in the prior financial year is to push these policies and procedure manuals to be updated, get it approved or presented at MANCA and get it approved by the accounting officer. So of that 19, we've done 16 policies and procedure manuals that have since been approved and been circulated. So the intention is that we are more vigilant in terms of these policies. We've also looked at our internal control in terms of the loss control. There was workshops held with the members. We've brought in external people to assist us, that we also be more stern in terms of the consequence management in terms of that. But the other is also because support service and finance is not unique. We also got 5 posts that's currently vacant. But we are dealing with it. But most of the things is because of our internal control policies not being updated, but we've done so. The issue about the scholarship, I think we partly also answered this. The phase out was not because of the budget cuts. It was a conditional grant a few years ago, and then the social workers was appointed in the provinces, and therefore the funding went to the provincial equitable share, and then it was a decision by National Treasury that because we don't have the ability to absorb all these scholarships for the graduates, that this should be phased out. Otherwise, we will sit in with Isabella can give the numbers in terms of this, but we will sit in with unabsorbed people that we've put through the system but unable to appoint them. The question about that the chairperson raised about the underspending. If you look at last year's underspending, the bulk of that underspending of the 1.8 that we currently have is underspending for the prior financial year. 1.67 relates to the social grants. We were unable to process all the 350 SRD before the end of March. So that will roll over into the new financial year, and that money has since been sent back to Treasury, to the revenue. And we have requested that funding to be rolled over so that we'll be able to pay that backlog. So other than that, Chair, I think that is all from my side. Thank you.
Thanks, Fanny. Do you want to come in on the historical challenges in terms of funding planning quickly? And then I'll give over to Kumbula and to Devon to take us through and also respond to the HSCTA issue. Fanny?
So currently we've been underfunding. Our problem is that our automation, but our systems and the statistics that we currently have is not as National Treasury wants in terms of the evidence base. So this is what we're trying to drive in this financial year, that we get statistics and systems up and running. So when we start requesting funding, is that we've got proof that this is what's happening, this is our numbers, this is our statistics, and we can give in terms of evidence that we are underfunded. Because if you look at the case that we had, Nawongu case, we did a costing on that. Just for normal services for social development, it's going to cost us an order of 9.3 billion in total. And this was a case study that was 2-3 years ago, and Trisha just said it's unaffordable. And then they gave us something like 200 million that goes to provinces. So historically underfunding, but we are getting there, that we get our stats and our information when we have to make a case to the National Treasury. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Fanny. Can I, Civil, is there anything you want to add to the social worker program before I give to Kumbula and Devon? I think he's touched on
I think Fanny has effectively covered the response to the scholarship program. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Can I hand over to Devon and Kumbula quickly? If you could deal with the vacancy rate issue as well as the CETA issue.
ADG? Good morning, Chairperson.
Good morning. The DM, the Chairperson. Chairperson.
Good morning, Chairperson.
Morning, DM. I am asking your indulgence. Can I please be excused? I just have something very, very urgent that just popped up like right now that I need to deal with. My grandchild is in theater today. So can I just be excused to attend to that, please?
You are excused at the end, and can you wish the grandchild a speedy recovery?
Thank you very much. My sincere apologies. Maybe before I go, Chair, if you would allow me, I think it's important besides Minister, if you'd allow me, that we just give the context, because Fanny answered the question around the scholarship, but I thought it is important for me to just give the context to the committee that there are three reasons why we are where we are with the scholarship, because the matter started from the social work in Daba that former Minister Dlamini convened. One of the concerns that was presented by social workers was, can we find a balance? Because yes, we go to school, we get trained, but we don't get employed. And in balancing out, we then went to cabinet and requested a 50-50, like a 50% be utilized for the absorption of social workers, and 50% can then bring in new students. And what then also followed that was that the 50% absorbed, and then we then took a move that went to the scholarship being managed not by us anymore, but by the NFSAS. So we had a 50-50 kind of like a management between ourselves and NFSAS. And at the moment, the scholarship is not getting, not disappearing completely. It's just getting out of DSD to go where it will be utilized as a scholarship managed by the Department of Higher Education. So it's partly issues around financing, issues around absorbing social workers. And the last point of the three was that, Chairperson, the issue around ward-based social workers, that is what we are currently implementing with the provinces. But there is a cabinet decision where we brought the CAP memo and requested that all other departments like DBE, like health, like defense, like police, like correctional services must employ social workers as a need that is urgent. And there was a committee that was established led by the late DDG. And I think, are at the stage where we need to find a way of following what the other departments that actually need social workers equally as we do are employing them. So I thought I must just, as I leave, just give the committee the particular context that part of the scholarship is going to higher education, so that we can finish and see through all the social workers that are in the scholarship, and then it will then be managed like all the different scholarships that government provides. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Deputy Minister. I think we can excuse you. Thank you. DG will come back to you and your team.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you, Deputy Minister, even for the guidance on the social work program. I think part of responding also, Kumbula and Devon, if you can also touch on the plan that we have with regards to the social worker, rather with the absorption of social workers, in line with the cabinet decision that was taken in 2018, I think it is. Thank you.
Good morning, Chairperson, members and Minister. Firstly, let me start with the vacancy rate. My name is Kumbula Ndaba. We've got a vacancy rate of 7% in the department. This includes the post of the DG, two DBGs which have been advertised, the seven chief directors, all of which have been advertised. We also have got four posts from finance and three from audit. All of these posts have been advertised and are currently at various stages. Now, in terms of the critical skills that we require in the department. There are quite a number, and these have come up as a result of the work that we've conducted in the department. They relate to data analysts, actuaries, data scientists, economists, researchers, as well as policy developers and IT system developers. So these are some of the critical skills that we will require in the department. Now, in relation to the organizational redesign, we've entered into a process to reorganize the department. We have engaged National Treasury and GTEC to assist us with the restructuring process, and we have now developed a new structure. However, the issue of budget impedes our ability or the ability of the department to employ or recruit more staff, and most of these would be social workers. We've calculated roughly that, for example, if we were to recruit 9,000 plus minus social workers at entry salary level 7, unemployed social workers will require plus minus 2.3 billion rand. So this is something that requires engagement. Now, this also talks to the issue of the redesign. Because of the budget cuts, we have come to a conclusion that it would be necessary for the department to redesign
You are gone, Kumbula. We lost you. We've lost you, Kumbula. Devon, you want to continue on that, please? Okay, we've lost Kumbula. Apologies for that, Chair. Let me suggest that until we get Kumbula back, can I ask that we go to Dr. Mlawuti? Doc, if you can respond to the issues relating to value for the work that we've been doing around the food distribution program, as well as the alignment that we're doing in terms of linking social grant recipients to social development programs. Dr. Mlawuti?
Thank you also, Chairperson, members of Parliament, as well as the Minister. In terms of the REACH, we have distributed about 2,609,000 food parcels, as well as to also manage to reach about 11,685,000 people in terms of access to food parcels. And also with regard to issues of whether we've used the monies effectively, we can say that looking at the number of the people that we have reached, we can confidently indicate that we have used the funds adequately and ensure that there was value for money in the sense that we provided food that was not inflated in terms of food price, as well as the nutrition value of the food. It was at the required value, and also that we also ensured that we centralized procurement so that there should not be difference in terms of prices and so forth. So in that way, we're trying to ensure that there is that balance in terms of buying of food and also from province to province. And also, one of the lessons that we've learned, DJ and the Chairperson, as well as the Minister, is that there needed to be some kind of coordination within all the role players, wherein we worked together with the national and provincial government, but also partnered with civil society organizations, faith-based organizations, as well as business. And we have learned that working together in that manner has really assisted us to reach out to a number of beneficiaries. And also in terms of service delivery, we have learned that it has forced us to bring transformation of conventional service delivery strategies, wherein all of us, after we have closed the nutrition centers, we had to find mechanisms of saying how then do we make sure that people still have access to food. And through the kind of partnership that we had, we managed to improve accessibility of services that we're rendering from various government departments, from business and so forth, but also tighten security in terms of various options where people just access from different angles. We begin to create some coordinated mechanisms, which then allowed access in a more coordinated way. So in that way, we're able to increase the reach and also improve the impact, which indicates that the numbers that we've been able to reach, it was because of that ability to work together and also to be able to be seen as providing services in a more integrated manner. And also in terms of another one lesson is the social protection provisions, wherein we learned that there's so much that the government is doing to protect the poor and vulnerable, which includes provision of social grants, but there was a need to increase coverage and integration of the social protection interventions. In that way, we make sure that we consider also integrating provision of food to legal foreign nationals, and also that everyone, also as we provide food, we also take care of other challenges, such as health challenges in terms of adhering to protocols and so forth. So in that way, I think those are the lessons that we have learned. But most importantly, Chairperson, partnership is one issue that we said we find it working across in the sense that we felt that as a department, we can't do this issue of food provision alone. We have to work with other partners. We work with SASA and other businesses, as I've indicated. And in terms of sustainable livelihood, we learned that there's a need to strengthen the resilience of household livelihoods to ensure that the population is not entirely dependent on the social protection provision from government. In that way, we have also, as a department, had other programs, such as now we're working on the document that begin to link beneficiaries of the grant to sustainable livelihood intervention, so that even after they've received food, they must be able to sustain themselves going forward. So in the main, those are the key lessons that we've learned. And in terms of what we lessons that we've learned, but that we want to change going forward, we'll want to strengthen capacities of people and communities to create sustainable livelihoods, because we have learned that they don't have those capacities. But also we will want to develop a national integrated social protection information system that will streamline targeting, means testing and beneficiary targeting. And also lastly, to introduce an e-voucher solution to replace food parcels. I think on that note, Chairperson, Minister and DG, it's what we can submit from community development side. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you, Mulawuti, for that. Just to say that there's an issue that I didn't respond to.
My apology, DG and Minister Chairperson, I've reconnected via different system. This is Kumbula.
Yeah, proceed, Kumbula.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm not sure at what point the committee lost me. My apologies for that, but I was simply saying on the restructuring of the workplace, we have indeed consulted with organized labor. Not only that, we've also established or appointed rather change management champions. We've consulted various chief directorates as well as program managers, and these consultation processes are ongoing. Now, I was saying earlier that if we look at the issue of the organizational structure, if we were to populate this structure, and in particular, if we were to employ 9,000 social workers, we will require plus minus 2.3 billion rand, which is quite a huge amount of money, and the department does not have this money. So these are some of the issues that are difficult, and these are the issues that we continue to engage on. We have approached the National Treasury, specifically on the employment of social workers. We have put a bid for plus minus 4,500 social workers. And the idea is that these social workers are going to be distributed in all the 9 provinces and specifically at various districts in order to assist us to deal with quite a number of social ills that social workers are trained to deal with. So these are some of the issues that we are currently dealing with. There was a question asked about whether or not we are employing persons with disabilities, and the answer to that is yes. We are currently standing at 1.8% of persons with disabilities. Before that, we were actually at 2%, but there was a decision to move the unit that deals with persons with disability to the presidency, and that reduced our figures to 1.8%. So we continue to manage this through our Employment Equity Forum, and we make sure that in all the equity targets, we continue to monitor this. Of the 50, I'm not sure. I think that I've dealt with basically all the questions that. Unless there are questions that are still remaining, yeah. And I cannot.
I think you dealt with all of them, Kumbula. Thank you very much. Okay. I just wanted to say, Chair, on the previous response by Laoti, we did also receive a substantial amount of money at midterm last year for food provision because of the space that we were in. We had used up a bulk of our allocation, both in terms of the provinces and the national department, by the second quarter already. So we had to go back to Treasury and through the midterm make a request for additional funding, and we received about 500 million rand for that. And I think through our interventions to respond directly to the question whether they've been effective or not, indeed they have. And I think that we've been able to reduce hunger to a large extent, and in some cases even malnutrition. And then Laoti spoke about the hybrid model that we're looking at in terms of lessons learned, in terms of improving efficiency, where we are using both food vouchers and food parcels as well. So that's the key issue there, Chair. I just want to then ask, Chair, if I can hand over to Thabani, followed by the NDA. Thabani, if you can talk to the value of partnerships that we have, in some cases international, in some cases local, and then NDA, if you could talk to the questions raised by the Chair in terms of the achievements and the work done by the NDA. But I'd also like you to talk about the women-owned enterprises that you support and the plan in that regard, including SMMEs and cooperatives. Thank you very much. Thabani, then NDA.
Thanks, DG, and thanks, Chairperson Minister and the Deputy Minister in absentia and all honorable members. I think the question arose from came from the honorable Chairperson, and is a result of our one of the recommendations that we are making in terms of strengthening our stakeholder engagement and so forth. But I think what one needs to say, of course, with the imminent budget cuts and the obvious COVID-19 that we had, it has really reawakened and reconfirmed that the need for us to dig deeper beyond just our pockets and also strengthen our capacity to deliver is becoming more necessary and urgent now. And this has been a historical function that we had in the department in terms of donor coordination and stakeholder management. And indeed, even in the current APP, you will see that we have one of the specific targets in terms of having a stakeholder and donor management strategy that should be implementing for the next 3 years. And of course, there are different values that comes as we have different partnerships and partners internationally and otherwise. For example, we have partnerships with your UNDP, your UNFPA, your UNICEF, and these are largely not mainly on the monetary value, but more on the exchange of expertise. We receive advisory and so forth. But when you move then to the welfare program or the welfare services program in the main, you'll find that there will be those that are monetized. For example, we have the USAID that the DG has spoken about. We have a partnership, which is an MOU over 5 years. There's a new extension now for the other 3 years. On the government capacity building a program that we have engaged in. This is mainly about how do we strengthen our systems so that we are able to respond better and efficiently, especially in the face of vulnerability, in particular the HIV related. So this is a PEPFAR funding. And we also at a different level in terms of service delivery, for example, is understand and appreciate that NPOs become a very important partner. So we have in the department a partnership model that we have informing the NPOs and so forth. But in a nutshell, these will vary. And also, but the main interest will be in the welfare services, which would be monetary values. And it's coming not just from USAID, but also other funders, including your German banks and so forth. But in a nutshell, we do have a much more structured inquest for us to have a better coordination in terms of our stakeholders, in particular the donors as well. That's how I can conclude, Chairperson. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Tabani. I would then ask the CEO of NDA to come in. While I'm at the chair, if I may beg your indulgence, if the secretariat could allow my device, Linton M, just to share a slide when we respond at the end of the question and answer session. Thank you very much. Linton M, not Linton Mkunu, Linton M. Thank you. NDA?
Thank you, DG. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. I think I want to take from the Chairperson's request to say we are not only addressing the Parliament or the Honorable Members, but we're addressing the public of the Republic of South Africa at large. And safe to say our mandate is very broad and is very huge. Actually, we have two mandates in one, that of granting funds to civil society organizations, that of strengthening their capacity building programs and their organizational structures, that of doing research and dialoguing with communities for policy inputs for development, that of doing imperative studies to inform our programs and our policies. And Chair, I must say that as per mandate in terms of Section 4, in us granting mandate, we were mandated by Parliament and civil society at large to be the only conduit in the country to conduit funds. The funds that would have came from the various departments of the country, international donors, private business and private individuals. That had not happened except to say we've been getting grants only from the Department of Social Development in the main. As the committee members may appreciate that at the onset, we're located at the National Treasury, where all the EU funds will be channeled for NDA to do their conduit through the civil society organization broadly. But since the evolution in terms of us being located of civil, in the social development, it was the sole responsibility of social development to ensure that the sustainability of NDA through the allocation that was coming from the National Treasury. I think that needs to be really taken up at a different level and a different engagement in ensuring that if NDA has to deliver on its broader mandate, that of granting funds to the civil society organization, every government department should play a role in contributing to the grants that we will then contribute to the civil society organization. Secondly, we wouldn't just grant funds if we have not mobilized the civil societies, capacitated them in terms of governance, in terms of compliance to legislation and policies. That is our key main role, which we've been doing over time. We're sitting here speaking of more than 100,000 that have been through our processes of grant funding model or capacity development model. And once we've capacitated them, we give these grants as a startup for them to do the activities of poverty eradication program, and in the main would then graduate them to small businesses and will link them to the economic opportunities that are provided by the state or provided by the environment as circumstances. Safe to say, when DG touches on the women empowerment, in the main, we've touched on the capacity, main focuses categories where ECDs, food security space, and manufacturing in the main school uniform, why we have targeted those areas. We know that many women in the rural areas are in the farming space. And once they've produced and they have so much in there to harvest, they didn't have a link in terms of cracking the mainstream where to take these products to. But our social development in terms of for food security unit, our SASA has been the core value chain for them to get anything taken off their market. So the SRD, we've been giving, these women have been given priority in terms of making sure that the department procures from these women that we have since empowered. SASA in the main for their food parcels and their SRD programs, they've been the off-takers main in the main from this empowered civil society organization. And instead, even in the school uniform production, SASA in terms of the program SRP again, for the school uniform of the orphans, they've been the main off-takers of this. So if we would have the small business prioritizing these women, I think in terms of being making a dent in the poverty eradication space, that's where we'll be getting to. So the whole aim of the NGA is to ensure that we increase the ever-escalating database of grant beneficiaries so that they are weaned off this grid and they are able to produce and they are able to generate income from the very opportunities that are provided for by the state. Safe to say that the environment that was brought about by pandemic last year, once the National Treasury had offered us a database to say these are the service providers that have been identified where all the government needed to procure from. So we had an engagement with National Treasury to say, we have our seasoned cooperatives led by women, led by youth, who've been doing the sewing in the main for school uniform. Let them be prioritized for production of cloth masks. And I must say that we shared our database with various departments, and we can proudly say, in the main, the social development has led again, and SASA is within a portfolio into the NGA to be the lead procurers of this cloth mask from this organization. More than 100 million really benefited this organization during the crisis which was faced by the country. So those are some of the highlights that we can talk to in at a high level. But safe to say, even in the space of ECD, in the past, we've managed even to cater for the ECDs that are not infrastructural in rural areas in the main, where we had introduced mobile ECDs to have access, since the ECD is a universal key priority for the country. So we've been in that space as well, minimal in terms of infrastructure due to the minimal resources that we had, but we needed to centralize and focus in terms of those ECDs. And I must say, in food securities, many of our food producing cooperatives and mainly in the areas of the rural areas, they are linked to these markets now, the township, immediate township shops that they are now delivering them to. So we've linked them to the Department of Agriculture as well to access more land, because they will do the small scale farming, but they've extended. And we are happy in submitting more factual data in terms of how far we've made implications in fighting poverty. So those are the areas. In space of research, we've done much work in terms of the landscape of the civil society. As you might be aware, that the resources are ever shrinking for the civil society to survive. But our key aim is to centralize the funding within the secondary civil society so that they are able to have partners in terms of primary civil society in alignment with the district development model, so that whatever that we make contributions to in terms of our intervention, it can be evaluated much easier, much conveniently aligned to the district development model using those secondary district model, secondary CSOs organization. And lastly, Chairperson, which is what is really going to hit us hard is the question of the ICT master plan and digitization. We know that mostly our work is interface and labor intensive. In terms of labor intensiveness, we're talking of wanting to evaluate and measure the impact within which our investment is procuring for us as government. And we want to be able to engage at the level of development how far we are shifting from the space of fighting poverty. But the ICT, the challenge that we had from the very onset, why it took us overlapping year after year to spread, was trying to say, since we have 200 million resources that we get allocated for by the department, we're saying we could have done it, the ICT master plan, within 1 year, but it was very costly. Hence, we had to spread it over years. But we are really, really appealing that if there was a way, now compared by the pandemic, that our rural communities and rural CSOs will be highly impacted on if this digitization had to stall further due to the resources that we now have to share and squeeze in spreading the little rank and little sense that we have. So ICT remain our core, and digitization is now compelling us to look at the creative ways and innovative ways of making sure that the civil society, we've seen them during the pandemic, that they remain the key area and the role player in fighting the scourge of poverty during the pandemic. Taking the food parcels to the household, those volunteers are primarily led by CSOs. So these CSOs, if they are highly funded, highly capacitated, the capable state is the dream that through NDA can be realized. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you, Honorable
Thank you very much, CEO. Chair, we're almost at the tail end now. I will then ask the CEO of SASSA to respond to a number of questions raised around SASSA. CEO, if you can come in, and then immediately after that, we'll close off with a response from Brenda. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, DG Chairman. I will ask the key executives that are responsible for particular areas to respond to some of the issues. But of critical importance that I wanted to respond to is as to whether we believe we're as effective as we should be, and as to whether the relationship with SABO is impacting on our people the way it should. And then I will ask Saiki to talk to the budgets, and then I will ask Diane to speak specifically about the grants and with specific reference to the 350 in terms of where we are, how we're going to deal with the people that are still in the pipeline that have not been paid. The relationship with SABO dates back to about 2 years ago. I must say that when it comes to the issue of 350 in particular, with the constraints that we had, we ended up with no solutions other than having to go to our government partner, that is SABO, to help us in terms of distributing the funds, particularly the 350. We understand that because the funds had to be distributed in cash, because of the procurement processes that they would have had to go to for us to find alternative solutions, that we understand actually exist, but because of the timing, they could not be able to deal with that. SABO has, with specific reference to the 350, been dispersing funds to 4 million people over the past year that we've been doing this. Of our normal clients, we've got 11.3 million clients, and of that 11.3 million, 8 million clients are currently serviced by SABO, with not a lot of them actually getting their funds through SAPO, but using the NPS system, which becomes a great advantage. It's only 500,000 clients that go to the counter and get their funding from SAPO, and about 200,000 that live in areas where there is no NPS infrastructure for them to be able to access their funding. So those are the ones that actually go to SAPO for them to get their funding. The ministers, both the joint ministers, have put in place structures whereby we can ensure that not only do we strengthen the relationship, but we strengthen the delivery in terms of the things that we need to do as a collective, because we process the clients, but at the end of the day, when it comes to the payment side, the bulk of the clients are serviced by them, with 30% of the clients being used, actually using banks. clients do have a choice. And again, I call them clients. I know the minister says we need to understand that in terms of the constitution, they are beneficiaries. 30% of our beneficiaries get their funding through the banks because they do have a choice to go to whatever place. And we do disperse funds to all our clients using a card. We use a banking system and we don't pay necessarily by cash. Those that use cash would go to the pay points to go and get their cash utilizing the post office. So we're not anywhere close to where we need to be, but it's been a long journey that we've traveled. And we think we have improved in terms of our people not going under a tree for them to get their money, but also ensuring that people have a choice. Yes, there's a whole range of other things that we need to deal with regards to the issue of fraud in terms of card replacement, particularly that happens at the post office. But these are issues that we continue to engage on. We have a lot that we've covered, but there's still a lot that we need to do to make sure that our people experience dignity as we serve them, ensuring that we move from good to great. Diane, can you come with the 315 terms of where we are? And Saki will talk to the budgets. Thanks, DG. Thank you very much.
Thank you, ma'am. And good afternoon, honorable members, minister, and DG and CEOs. Just on the 350 grant, there was questions around how many payments are still outstanding. As at the end of the financial year, we were sitting with about 2.2 million grants that have been approved in the previous financial year that have not yet been paid. This is not 2.2 million people, but grants, because some of the people could have grants for more than 1 month that is outstanding, if the honorable members would just keep that in mind. We also have about 1.4 million grants that have been approved on appeal that have not yet been paid. These are appeals that go up to the period to the end of January. The appeals for February, March and April are still being reconsidered. The closing date for citizens to lodge appeals for this last 3 months of the grant is the 31st of May. So the appeals for that period would only be dealt with after the 31st of May. The amount of money that we require to honour all the grants that have been approved in the previous financial year but not yet paid is about 1.9 billion rand, and we are busy dealing with Social Development and National Treasury on that. Then there was a specific question around how many people received the grant that they were not entitled to. The AG had identified a number of possible overpayments, and I do stress that was possible overpayments, and we went back and reconciled and reconsidered all of those that had been identified by the AG. We've confirmed that there are 31,929 grants that were paid to people who did not qualify. The majority of these being on databases that were not available to SASSA, particularly as we started working on this grant. It includes applicants who were receiving money from other sources, such as other COVID programs that had been put in by government, including the payments to the small-scale farmers, payments to sportsmen, and to various other categories of citizens who then also applied for the 350 grant. The total amount that then was overpaid to these 31,000 citizens is 11.1 million rand. We are busy working with our finance department to see how we're going to be able to recover these amounts. I also just want to stress that the majority of these citizens only received one payment of the 350, because by the time the AG had identified them, we then immediately stopped any future payments. So it was able to limit the loss to government quite considerably. But the total loss is less than a 0.01% of the total budget that we were given for this grant. The question around consequence management, I just wanted to explain that all of the validations for this grant was done electronically. So it wasn't any specific person saying this application's approved or that application's not approved. It was done electronically. The validations were done against information that was provided to us from a number of other government departments and entities, and we really relied on that information. Where we did not have the information, it did allow for people who should not have qualified to get the grant. However, certainly, and everybody would know, and you would see it in the number of appeals that we received, the error was rather on excluding people who could have qualified rather than including people who did not qualify. So all in all, the validations that were put in place were relatively effective, and it is something that we will be looking at to introduce for all of our other grant applications as we move forward. Thank you so much, CEO. Thank you, honorable members.
Okay, thank you very much. CEO, have you responded to all the questions? Estasa?
CFO is responding to the issue impact on the budget.
Okay, CFO?
Thank you very much, DG, CEO, and good morning, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, Minister. I will just respond to the other questions that were raised that related to compensation of employees. Honorable Members, when we were during the state of disaster, we had to revise the COE budget, and also during the adjustment budget, we had to lose an amount of 230 million within SASA, which meant that the positions that we thought that initially would fill, which initially were about 290 positions, were to be revised downwards, and at least consider some critical positions that we needed to fill. During the year 2021, we undertook a project as we approach the year 2021-22, just to say that how best can we manage the COE, which is shrinking, which is affecting most of the local offices. And we ended up with about 134 posts, and largely most of them, they are actually at the lower level. As you have seen in the presentation, that we were saying that we would have loved many of the local offices at least to be led at level 12, but because it is not practical, we said let's make makeshift arrangements that the level 8 will run those offices, and where possible, we can at least have people to act in those positions just to stabilize the operations. Our approach is that we are already undertaking or in the final stage of awarding a contract that will at least help us to do the business process reengineering. And this will answer the question that was asked by Honorable Matapa to say that why don't you go to Treasury with a revised structure? And once that process is done, which is the business process reengineering, we will be able to go with a scientific assessment of the capacity requirement of the agency. And that will form part of the business case that we will be able to do. We do have a considerable number of senior managers, the positions that are currently vacant. But what we have decided to do, just for the purpose of stability and continuity, we have asked some of the senior managers to oversee certain units. Like honorable members will have noted that we have got the three regional executive managers, and they have been tasked to oversee the other regions where they are not heads in those areas. So that has been the strategy that we have employed to date to at least cushion the impact of the budget cut. Well, my last comment will have been around the issues of the impact of all the other programs. What we have undertaken was that within the contracts that we have now, when they expire, we need to review all those contracts to see whether they are organizational fit, but also to see whether we cannot reduce the scope of some of the projects. And within that kind of a process, we can be able to find savings to fund some of the pressing issues within the organization. Lastly, which is my last comment, we are looking at engaging with Treasury just with the retained surplus and the usage of retained surplus. Where we have got any savings, we will ask Treasury to say, give us a leeway that we can utilize that amount, which was identified as a savings, for the purposes of running some of the high impact programs and projects like the upgrading of ICT infrastructure and local offices, that if you go digital, you have enough bandwidth to be able to process transactions and also be able to answer some of the calls without plugging the system. Thank you very much, DG.
Thank you very much, Chair. This is the last speaker, Honorable Chairperson. I'll ask Brenda to speak to these last critical issues, very technical issues. And I'd like to show a slide, just to, two slides very quickly as she makes this presentation. Brenda?
Thank you, Chairperson. I thought in order to respond to the questions around the BIG as a social relief of distress and the other issues raised around the GDP comparison to other countries, that I should flag this slide to just preface the responses to say, for example, in our country, we spend an estimate around, over the past 20 odd years, we have spent around 3.5% on social grants. Other countries at economic level of development and around the African continent are spending a little bit lower than that on just the grants, primarily because of the economic performance of those countries. But countries in higher income countries are spending much more than that in terms of their social security systems in total, around 6% or more on social security. And yeah, so but for us, the consideration of comparing other countries to ourselves in terms of how we are dealing with issues of poverty and inequality, we think needs to be informed by firstly where we start as a nation compared to other countries from the perspective of how we use the resources of the country to deal with poverty and inequality. And I've already said earlier on that that what we to correct for market inefficiencies that result in some people becoming very poor and other people being very rich in the same country. Basically, the income distribution issue, which affects the extent to which the country's economic development trajectory is higher or lower. So for us, if you look at the slide that is in front of you now, you will see that when you compare ourselves to other countries, South Africa is on the extreme right, the red bar is South Africa compared to other countries. So before we intervene in terms of the government's fiscal policy, the taxes and the social grants and other transfers, before government intervenes, you will see that a country at the very extreme left, Slovak Republic, their income inequality at their stage is around 0.24. And then through the use of transfers and so forth, they start at point, the dot above there, they start at 0.4, their income inequality. And through interventions in their fiscal policy, tax system, et cetera, they are then able to reduce inequality in those countries, in that country, the Slovak Republic, to around 0.24. So you get better income distribution and therefore greater economic participation by the population as a whole, which affects the growth trend in that country. For South Africa, we have already said we are the highest, the most unequal country in the world, both pre and post the interventions of our tax system. So whereas we start at before we do any kind of tax transfers and social grants and so forth, we start at 0.72, which is the highest on the whole of all of the countries that we have in front of you. It's at 0.72. We use our tax system to reduce that only to 0.62, which means we still stay way above the other countries in the world in terms of income inequality in the country. The next slide then shows what that is. It means that basically compared to other countries, we use our tax system to only reduce income inequality by 13%, which is the red bar in front of you, whereas other countries are way ahead of us. Even if you compare us with countries at equal levels of economic development, for example, compare us to Brazil, which is just above us at 18%, and countries such as, for example, Latvia, Lithuania, which are not rich countries, Romania, those are not rich countries, but they are using their tax system and their transfer systems more effectively, or they are using much more of it to impact on inequality in the country. For us, this is something that we think is a very important consideration in thinking about the design of a social protection system, not just social security system and not just the social grant system, but how a country intervenes in order to deal with poverty and inequality. This is a very important tool that government has. The fiscal policy that we use, how we transfer the, in terms of income support, how we use the tax system to deal with income distribution and total. So this, I thought, is a very important preface to responding then to the questions that have been posed around GDP and comparisons and how we are thinking then about the SRD and the DIG proposal. So for us to be able to intervene as social development, we see ourselves as being fundamental to addressing the issues of poverty in the country. We are at the heartbeat because we face poor people on a day-to-day basis as a sector. You've heard some of the things that Sasa was speaking about and that MGA was speaking about, the interventions that we do. All of them geared towards dealing with issues of poverty and inequality and deprivation and vulnerability in the country. So for us, we view poverty not only as a matter of income, but also as a matter of a much broader set of interventions that need to be put together, because poverty manifests in multiple ways, in whether or not people are able to access education, whether they're able to access healthcare, they're able to have access to water, all of the other interventions that need to be put in place to really tackle poverty in its multiple dimensions. So from social development perspective, the grants are just one aspect. They're very key because income enables a person to even be able to access the other benefits. As an example, if you provide free health care to people, but health services are 10 kilometers away from where people can access them and you're not providing transport, it means that people cannot access that benefit. So there needs to be an interaction. For us, all the different interventions must be mutually supportive and mutually complementary. So the social grant is just one aspect of that. As an example, in talking then to the, for example, the question of the child support grant and why we were recommending for it to be extended, there's a court case that the department is facing that we are dealing with, which was about the fact that there is a serious problem of often in the country being able to access child support, being able to access the foster care grant. And the reason many children are going into the foster grant system is because of the differential in terms of the amount of money that's given to the child support grant and then what is given to the foster child grant. Given the high levels of poverty in the country, many families who would want to take on their children, who their relatives, who in the instances where a relative has died and the child of that relative is left to now stay with the family. That family is unable to necessarily support the child, take on the additional financial cost of raising that child. And government provides for income support for such families. However, the child support grant is below the food poverty line. Now it's around 450 rand now, which means that they can't even buy a full proper food for the child for the whole month with that amount of money. Hence, the focus then on many families then approaching the foster child care system instead, because the allocation there is a bit higher, the amount of money there is a bit higher. The problem with that approach, though, is that the foster child system is meant to be a system that provides protection to vulnerable children who are without adequate care, children who are in dangerous situations, who are being harmed and neglected and so forth. So in order for those children to be placed in proper protective care, we need social workers to come and assess those households where the children are to be placed and then go to court to present the case for the magistrate to allow certain people who have been assessed to foster those children and look after them. But in order to continue the protection, we have to make sure that every 2 years, we go and we check whether those children are still okay. We do an assessment again. And if we are happy with the assessment that the families continue to look after the child, then a foster child order is issued again by the magistrate. This happens every 2 years because it's meant to be a child protection system, not income support. So now what happens is when families who have inherited children from their relatives who have died are also now trying to approach the same system, whereas those children are not in danger, they are not needing care in that sense. It's just that they don't have the money to support the children. Our view is that we should not clog the foster care system with such families, because for them to do assessments every 2 years and then go to court to request the the foster child order to be issued is throwing up both the social work capacity. It's also throwing up the court system. So for us, we want to take those sorts of children out of the foster child system and put them in an extended child support grant program where we top up the allocation that's given for the child support grant in order to give a little bit more support to those families because they're looking after children who are not their own biological children, but they are part of the family. So that's what we are proposing in terms of this child support grant top-up. Treasury had agreed on the proposal before and had actually allocated money for it. We needed to just change the legislation. However, the legislation was only approved in December of the 2020. So the allocation that had been given for it, which was, we had estimated around 600 million to do this. That allocation was then removed. Obviously, now that the allocation for the grant has been reduced, we no longer have this money to be able to implement this policy, which means our ability then to address the court case that required us to address the foster child crisis is at risk in that we will not be able to implement this unless an allocation is made for it. We've begun engaging Treasury on this, so we are hoping to continue that engagement to make sure that they do allow us to be able to implement this thing, which will reduce the burden on the foster child system, but also enable us to give better support to those children who are raised by extended family members. The inspectorate is a similar thing. In order to really have a deep impact in terms of poverty and inequality in the country, we have to make sure that the money that's available for the country, for the social grant system, is used exactly for the intended purpose. We must make sure that we tackle issues of fraud, we tackle issues of maladministration, and the inspectorate is meant to be the institution that does that. However, the allocation for the because we did not have it in place as yet, we're incubating it in the department. At present, we have about 10 people only who are in the skeleton staff. In a similar way to the extended child support grant, allocation was given to the department beforehand in order to be able to activate the inspectorate and properly staff it and so forth. However, that money is also gone now that there's been a reduction in the allocation to the department, which means our ability then to implement the inspectorate and ensure that we improve the performance of staff in terms of integrity of the social assistance system is at risk. It's important for us to be able to get the money for that. But this is about improving the capacity of the state to achieve its policy aims and make sure that we reduce leakage in the allocation that's given for social grants. Now to the big question about SRG and the lessons we've learned, the colleagues from SASA have spoken quite a bit about this. But it also speaks to...
Hello.
Hello.
I can hear the passion.
Okay, yes, I'm doing the chairperson. To just say that with regards to the SRG, the lessons have already been described in terms of the SASA response. But for us, we see that as intervening in a our view is that it's important to extend it to the SRG because we are giving people income, which provides them with an opportunity to be able to access the other services that government provides, but also it gives agency to people to be able to decide what food to buy and when to buy it and what else to use the money for, which we think will build on the economic performance of the country going forward. And we also think that if we can continue with that, we will also be able to, it's just dealing with the huge gap of able-bodied South Africans who do not have jobs. And we all know how the country has been struggling for decades now to address the problem of job creation. So if we are not able to give everyone a job, they are not all able to access jobs. We need to make sure though that they're accessing income in some way, in addition to being able to access like things like job creation, skills development, etc. Because we know that those are longer term interventions that are not available immediately to deal with issues of poverty. So that's hence our proposal that there needs to be an extension of the grant until such time that a lot of people can be graduated into jobs that are sustainable and will enable them to not need grants. But this is a long term program. Hence also the proposal for a basic income grant. We think that we must make sure that throughout people's lives, they have income in their hands to be able to participate in the economy, to be able to access opportunities, to be able to be members of society who have confidence and who have agency to run their own lives. Without income in the country, it's very difficult to feel the democratic dividend of being able to vote in the country. And so we think that it's a very important intervention. It's not the only intervention, but it's key to enable the country's social protection system to really have an effect. So that for us is why we are saying the 350 should be continued. We've seen the effect of it. We should continue. It has tackled inequality, it has tackled poverty. Let's continue with it. It's a very small amount of 350, whereas the cost of creating one job is much, much higher than that. So for us, it's a very direct intervention. It would give people income immediately, and then you can build on it, enable people then to act in the economy, become economic actors, you can buy and sell, etc., with that money and build then on that. But in the long term, we begin to have the sort of impact that other countries are having on economic development. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, Chair. That brings us to the end. Sorry we took slightly longer, but thank you very much for your indulgence.
Thank you, Honorable Minister.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you very much to the members, and thank you very much for the question. Chairperson, if I may start from the point that my understanding and the understanding of the department really is that we have to ensure our responsibility in as far as ensuring that there's improvement in the well-being of our people in general, but focus particularly on the most vulnerable. And I think that the presentation itself, the responses that were there, it's about us helping our people to reach their full potential. And then if we talk about our people reaching their full potential, it therefore means we also as a department need to do everything we can to make sure that other departments, whether it's health, it's education, it's transport and others, we must consistently raise the issues of social development, because if life is made easier on the other side by the other departments who are supposed to then deliver the services, it therefore means our life even becomes a bit easier. For instance, if you look at the question that was, the issue that was raised by Honorable Peters to say, everywhere you go, even when you're going on other issues, you end up being asked about questions that are related to social development. So our task right now, especially in the sixth administration, is to then say, let us not work in isolation. Hence, for instance, my push for the department, SASA and NDA to work in what we call a portfolio, so that we don't work in isolation of each other and we don't work in silos of each other. So at the center of everything that we are doing right now is to use every opportunity we can to make sure that in a coordinated manner, we deliver the services to our people. And therefore, the second most important area of work for me, which by the way, is a government's identification of the capacity of the state. If we can then be able to make sure that the state is capacitated enough to be able to respond to our people. And I think some of the responses, many of the responses that were many of the questions and the responses pointed to the issue of the capacity of the state, which then brings me also to the issue of the filling of the post. I am committed from an executive point of view in ensuring that the posts are filled. I am also pushing for the department to make sure that the posts that have not, that are not filled must be filled as quickly as possible. And I think the response was given about the time frame and how many of the posts. But of course, having said that, we also are facing the challenge of the budget cuts. And the budget cuts, I don't want to go back. It's been clearly articulated by the department, the impact of the budget cuts, which we have, and how those cuts are really going to have a negative impact. But I do believe, Chairperson and Honorable Members, that we can't moan and groan. This is the bottom line. This is the situation. We need what we call the Great Reset. And that reset for me is beyond the issue of just the budget and the budget cuts. The Great Reset for me is, we've just been going through a terrible, we're still going through a terrible process of COVID-19 and its impact. And therefore, we are going to be forced by circumstances now to relook at what we have in our kitty and ask ourselves a question, how can we be able to maximize that? And for me, the maximization is there's just things you're not going to do in the same old way. If you think you're going to get money from somewhere, it's not going to happen. But this is also the opportunity for us. For instance, I like the question which came to NDA saying, NDA, explain yourself as NDA. You are the National Development Agency. We are developmental in our own approach. And Chairperson, you asked the right question, for instance, about the issue of small and medium enterprises and how we can be able to make sure that our people are empowered to be able to take care of themselves. And Chairperson, I also want to break this, you know, the notion that when you are supporting people who are poor and in poverty, you are creating a dependency. We are a state that just wants to give. I don't think that it must be understood that way. It must be understood from a point of view of the state of these people even before COVID-19 happened. It must be understood from a point of view of the challenges that the nation is facing from economic empowerment, particularly of women, particularly of youth, particularly of people with disability. Even before there was COVID-19, we were struggling with this. And the department will tell you, Chairperson, that I am very much committed to ensuring that the experience that I had as the Minister of Small Business Development and the situation we are finding and where I am now, I'm saying to the department overall, there's a financial muscle that has to be used by the department, by SASA, by NDA, in making sure that financial muscle is the money that has to be circulating within the communities by improving the capacity for the communities to either run their own cooperatives, run their own spaza shops. And this is where I believe we shouldn't work alone as a department. We must make sure that we work with all others. Unfortunately for us, we are in a space where we always have to pull back, and there's a pull like that, and we have to keep on pulling back because the appreciation and understanding is that, my view, there isn't somebody who would prefer to go and get a 450 rand for a child when that person could actually be working somewhere else and getting something like 2,000 to 3,000. I'm telling you, the majority of people would rather go to where they are able to get much more money because they're not only just looking at the children, the child support grant, which is below poverty line, as Brenda is explaining. So I'm saying to the committee, with all the challenges that we are facing, we need this reset button. And this reset button, for me, needs to be realistic about the situation that we are finding ourselves. Also, included in that, you have the department and SASA and others talking about re-engineering themselves. This is the opportune time for us to do that re-engineering, being also forced by the circumstances in which we are in now. But we cannot be re-engineering forever. We cannot be resetting the button forever, because people are simply waiting for us to be able to give the necessary services. And so I'm hoping that the answers that were provided here are adequate, but I feel some are not. I still promise you, Chairperson, that some of the questions that I noted here, which I don't think were adequately answered because of the fact that there's also a time constraint and also we get torn between meetings. Let me promise that we will sit as a department and be able to say the questions that are supposed to be answered to take us forward. Which are those questions that need to be answered to take us forward? Because I don't only believe the committee is doing an oversight, but I also believe members have got the responsibility in that oversight to making some contribution towards how we must also shape the way we work. And thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you so much, Honorable Minister, and the DSD portfolio. obvious. You can see that it's a department and a portfolio that we have got an interest in as government because of its impact on the lives of our people and its potential impact if we reach a certain level of optimality. So thank you. As you said, we're always having an enemy of time. I think we can engage the whole day on the issues which have been raised by the honourable members, and the responses that are coming from your portfolio. And would definitely appreciate if on other things that you do it write to us and give us more meat on them. But I must say that with a little bit of time that we have, I think there's quite a mouthful that we got. Particular areas which I would just like you to prioritize and send responses back to us while you are busy with other issues. And you have alluded to those things and your team did. I would still like to get this specific about the interventions that the department has made in terms of trying to help the businesses that we were talking about, the SMEs, the rural businesses, women businesses, and so on and so forth. I'll tell you why is that important to us, because we do feel that the cutting and the consolidation of budget has got a limit. So for us to be able to get out of the situation that we are in, it's for as many of our people as possible being involved in income generation. Therefore, the question of money circulating within certain communities, the question of businesses, so that we are able to have one or more jobs coming from these cooperatives, one or more jobs coming from these companies owned by designated groups, so that again, as we grow, we allow SARS to start getting some form of tax, so that we are able to fund government and your department and other departments, so that they are able to fulfill their historical role. So it's very important that we do that. So I would definitely request that we have that, because I would like to follow up on them. And then just request the two graphs and the write-ups to those graphs which have been shared with us, if they can also come back sooner rather than later, that will also help us. But Royal Minister and your team, at DG, CEOs, the whole DSD portfolio, thank you very much for engagement. I think that takes us to the end of your agenda item. We are continuing with our agenda. We are free to sit, but we know that you have got many things to do. you are excused. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you to all members.
That is it. Yes, all members, thank you very much for the engagement with the department. Can we go to the next agenda item, which is the consideration of the minutes of 11 May 2021. They were sent to us, honorable members. Please go to them. Yes, let's go to those minutes. Let's go to those minutes. The minutes of the 11th of May 2021. Those are the minutes that we need to consider today. I take it you have opened them, honorable members. Are there any corrections? If none, can I have a mover for the adoption of the minutes?
Matafa, I move Chairperson.
Honorable Matafa.
I second.
Honorable Matafa moves. Honorable Peter second. Can we adopt the minutes then? The minutes are adopted as a true reflection of that meeting. Thank you. We go to the next agenda item. Darren, do we have any announcements to make?
Chairperson, no announcements. The link for tomorrow will follow once we receive the presentation from the Department of Health. I'm hoping they'll send it before 1 o'clock. Otherwise, I'm ready. I will send it.
Yeah. Please just remind. please just remind the honorable members about tomorrow.
Yes, Chair. Tomorrow we are seeing the Department of Agriculture, Rural Development and Land Reform, and then also the Department of Health. So we've got two separate stakeholders tomorrow.
Yeah. So we'll be very strict with our time, honorable members, and the questions tomorrow, since we have to meet two departments. Please go over your presentations and start casting your questions and your interventions. But thank you very much. So this brings us to the end of the meeting, and the meeting is adjourned. See you tomorrow. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Matafa.
Thank you, Chair.
Bye.
You, good luck. Good luck with your job, Honorable Peters.
I'm actually on my way there. Thank you.
Thank you.